young!" she exclaimed as I rose. "How old are you, boy? 14?
Without waiting for an answer, she swatted Kage Masao's leg with the back of her hand.
"Masao-san, how old is he now?"
"He is 17, my lady."
"Is he?"
Hancho's face took on an expression that could have passed for surprise.
"He looks younger than that. Ah, but you all look like babies to me."
She groped for a sake bottle, somehow managing to leave the empty ones undisturbed. Masao took the bottle and poured her a cup of the rice wine, which she downed in a single gulp, then held the cup out for more.
"You hide your disgust well."
With a start, I realized she was speaking to me. Her unclouded eye rolled up to fix me with a bright, intense stare.
"Better than Ichiro-san, his lurking little pupil, or even Masao-san here. I was not always like this, you know."
She sniffed and blew out a cloud of smoke, which curled around me like grasping tendrils.
"Once, I was so beautiful, Emperor Taiyo no Gintaro himself wished to make me his bride, and pined after me when I refused."
I did not know that emperor's name. Taiyo no Genjiro was the current emperor ruling from the Golden Palace, and Taiyo no Eichi was the emperor before him. Not knowing what to say, I remained silent. Hancho eyed me, her voice turning sly, her lips twisted into a leer.
"I could have stolen even your affection, demon slayer," she stated in a raspy voice. "Made you lust after me as the demon in your sword lusts for battle. You would not have been able to resist. What do you think of that?"
Masao cleared his throat.
"My lady, time grows short," he said. "You will not be able to remain out in this weather much longer. We need to return to Hakume Castle tonight."
Hancho pouted.
"Oh, very well," she sighed. "I suppose I shouldn't tease the boy any longer. But you're no fun at all, Masao-san."
Sitting a little straighter, she stuck the pipe in her mouth and glared down her nose at me.
"Kage Demon Slayer, I have called you here personally for a very important task. Tonight, I will send you on the mission you were born for."
She gestured, and Masao came forward to lay several sheets of paper on the table before me. I picked them up. A few were travel documents with the Kage Daimyo's seal, papers that let you pass through the territories of the other clans without being detained at the checkpoints. I was surprised, but only for a moment. Technically, the land was at peace. The last emperor had forbidden open warfare, and the clans had been enjoying a rare period of calm between centuries of fighting and bloodshed. Recently, however, it had flared up again, surprising no one. There was too much animosity, too many grudges and feuds and personal vendettas between the great clans. All it would take was a single aggressive act, an insult that could not be ignored, and the daimyos would be at each other's throats again. If I was discovered sneaking through a rival clan's territory without permission, that might be the act of aggression needed to declare war. And though I was certain I could do it without being caught, I understood Lady Hancho's precaution. The other paper was a scroll that, when smoothed out, displayed a map of the mountains somewhere in Earth Clan territory. A river snaked across the map, cutting through forest and plains, heading north. I thought I recognized it as the Hotarukawa, the river that eventually led to Kinhegen Toshi, the great capital city in the center of Sun Clan territory. The capital, however, was not my destination. By the X marked at the top of the largest mountain peak, I assumed that was my target.
The Silent Winds Temple sits atop the Niwaki Mountains on the eastern edge of Tsuchi Lands,
Lady Hanshō said, confirming my suspicion.
You will go to the gates posing as a pilgrim, asking to spend the night. If they let you in, so much the better. If not, you will infiltrate the temple some other way. It doesn't matter how you get in, only that you find what you were sent for.
Understood, I replied. A temple full of monks was not my normal mark. Most orders were peaceful, reflective organizations that stayed neutral from the politics and fighting of the clans. But it was not my place to question my daimyo. Who is my target?
This is not a killing,
Lady Hanshō replied, to my immense surprise.
I am sending you to retrieve an item for me. I would rather there not be slaughter, but there could be instances where your particular talents will come in handy. I am sending you, Tatsumi, because Ichiro believes that among your fellow shinobi, you are the best, and getting to the item might prove challenging, even for one such as yourself.
Her good eye narrowed, her words becoming harsh.
But it is imperative that you retrieve the item. I don't care what it takes, who you have to kill. Do not dare to return without it. That is an order from your daimyo.
Her voice grew even harsher, becoming a raspy growl that sent a chill up my back.
Kage Demon Slayer, know that if you fail me, the consequences will be dire. We will be watching you, and the Shadow Clan does not tolerate disobedience. Do you understand?
My lady, my life is bound to the Kage.
I bowed low once more, reciting the words that were expected. It didn't matter if I meant them. They were true nonetheless. And to you. I will not fail. Only tell me what I am searching for, and it will be done. What must I retrieve? Lady Hancho's eye burned feverishly bright in the darkened room, and her lips curved in a faint smile.
A certain scroll I lost, she whispered, years and years ago.
4. Tanuki Tea. I hated lighting the candles in the main hall. 277. There were 277 candles that had to be lit individually around the room, every evening before sundown so the monks could hold their nightly meditations. I don't remember when it officially became my duty to light the candles. I suspected Denga or Nitoru had suggested the idea to Master Jin, the old monk who cared for the hall, to teach me patience and dedication. Certainly you had to have both for this task. The main hall was enormous, with towering pillars and dark wood floors polished to such a sheen that you could see every flickering candle flame within. At the end of the hall stood the enormous green statue of the Jade Prophet, whose teachings all monks sought to emulate. There were no windows, and the only natural light came through the massive wooden doorway at the entrance, so the chamber was constantly dark and quiet. When all the candles were lit, they created a hazy orange glow throughout the room, transforming the hall into a surreal haven of shadow and dancing lights. But it took forever to light them all. I sighed, lowering the candlestick to gaze mournfully around the room. So many more to go. I hadn't even reached the 30 or so candles on the altar. If only there was a way to light them all at once. I paused, and a grin spread across my face at the idea. Actually, I could light them all at once. I was Kitsune, after all. Kitsune B was fire, wasn't it? Heatless, magical fire, but much easier to manipulate than normal flames. The monks wouldn't like it, of course. Nitoru and Denga definitely would not approve, but then they didn't approve of anything I did. I blew out the candle in my hand, then set it on the floor. Rising, I half-closed my eyes, brought my open palm before my face, and called on my magic. A ghostly blue-white flame sputtered to life between my fingers. It flickered and danced harmlessly against my skin, casting eerie shadows over the walls and pillars, growing steadily larger until I cupped a glowing sphere of foxfire. For just a moment, I saw my shadow on the wall of the temple, a human figure with pointed ears and a bushy tail rippling behind it. Raising my head, I flung my hand out in an arc, and kitsune bees scattered in all directions, tiny flames that flew across the room like falling stars. Lowering my arm, I observed my handiwork smugly. The hall now glowed with blue-white foxfire, luminescent flames that hovered on the end of candle wicks. In my opinion, it was much prettier than ordinary fire, though it did give the chamber a rather eerie, ghostly feel. But more important, all the candles were lit, and it was still a good hour until evening meditations. I was free until then. Dusting my hands, I headed for the exit. Voices outside made me freeze. I sidled along the wall to the door and peeked through the frame. Jean was walking up the steps toward the main hall, and worse, Denga was beside him. Oh no. My ears flattened in alarm, and I backed swiftly away. If they caught me, I'd probably get a lecture, maybe on the value of patience and dedication to one's task. Maybe they'd forbid me from using magic again. At the very least, they'd make me start over, lighting every candle one by one under supervision this time. Hiding place. I need a hiding place, quickly. I hurried to the far wall and, with a whispered apology, ducked behind the enormous statue of the Jade Prophet, just as a furious shout rang from the entrance. Fox fire? Denga's footsteps stalked into the room, and I peeked from behind the statue to watch him. The kitsune bee cast a flickering white glow over his outraged face as he whirled, gesturing furiously. The demon girl lit the candles with foxfire. Of all the... He sputtered with rage. When I find her... Now, Denga-san. Jin's voice echoed behind Denga, calm and amused. She is just a child, after all, and a kitsune at that. She does not understand. No! Denga spun one more time, glaring around the hall, before he turned and marched back toward the exit. This has gone far enough. It's become perfectly clear that she is more fox than mortal, that her yokai nature is overshadowing her humanity. Something must be done. I'll not stand for her pranks any longer. Jin blinked, watching him depart.
What are you planning to do, Denga-san?
Speak to Master Isao and convince him to put a binding on her,
Denga replied, making my stomach twist. His voice drifted up the steps as he left the hall.
Seal away that infernal fox magic for good, before we wake up and find a true demon in our midst.
My heart pounded. Jean watched Denga storm off, then sighed and began blowing out the kitsune bee flames above the candles. He extinguished them one at a time, slowly and deliberately, his entire attention focused on his task. He would be done in a few minutes, but I did not want to stay here any longer, in case Denga returned with Master Isao and made good on his promise. Trying to slip out while Jean was in the room would likely get me caught, but I had one last, supremely forbidden trick up my sleeve. At the statue's base, I knelt, dug my fingers between a certain board, and lifted it away, revealing a narrow hole that led under the floor of the main hall. It was too small for a human, even a petite human, to fit through. But I wasn't just human. I was also kitsune. Closing my eyes, I summoned my power once more, feeling my heart start to pound with anticipation. Most fox magic was illusion and trickery, just as Denga had said. Images laid over truth, making you see and hear things that weren't there. Flawless copies, but no more substantial than a reflection in a mirror. But there was one form that I could shapeshift into for real, though I was forbidden from using it without permission. Today seemed a good day to break all the rules. My body grew warm, and I experienced the abrupt sensation of shrinking rapidly, along with the familiar cloud of white smoke. When I opened my eyes, I was much closer to the floor. Sounds were sharper, shadows nearly non-existent, and the air was alive with new smells. The musty earth, the sharp tang of metal, and the hint of candle smoke still in the air. In the blurred reflection in the statue's pedestal, a pointed muzzle and golden eyes stared back at me. A bushy, white-tipped tail curled around its legs. Master Isao did not approve of me being a fox. "You are human," he'd told me on more than one occasion. "Yes, you are kitsune, but being Yumeko is much harder than being a fox. If you spend too much time in that body, someday you might forget what it means to be mortal." I wasn't quite sure what he meant by that, and right now it didn't matter. Ducking my head, I slipped easily into the hole, glided beneath the floorboards, and came out beneath the veranda. After making sure no monks, and especially Master Isao, were nearby, I headed into the garden, to the old maple tree leaning against the temple walls. Fox paws were quick and nimble, and the wood was very rough. I scurried up the gnarled trunk, dropped to the other side, and escaped into the cool stillness of the forest. Later that evening, I was sitting on a flat rock beside my favorite quiet pond, dangling my bare feet in the water as I pondered what to do next. Jewel-like dragonflies zipped over the mirror-like surface, and small whiskered fish swam lazily below my feet, eyeing my human-again toes. The sun had warmed the rock, and a breeze whispered through the bamboo grove surrounding the pond. It was a good place to forget your troubles, and I often came here when life at the temple got too dull or when I was hiding from Denga. Normally, the water, the breeze, and the fish could erase my worries in no time, but today, I couldn't forget what had been said in the temple hall. Seal away my magic? Just like that? Make it so I couldn't weave illusions, change my shape, or call upon my foxfire? That seemed excessive. I'd never actually hurt anything with my pranks except Denga's pride, and maybe a sliding panel or two. I glanced at my reflection in the water. A girl with pointed ears and yellow eyes stared back, bushy tail curled behind her.
"She is more fox than mortal," Denga had raged as he'd stormed out of the hall this evening. "Her yokai nature is overshadowing her humanity."
"That's not true," I told the kitsune staring back at me. "I'm still mostly human. At least, I think I am."
"Talking to yourself, little fox cub?"
I glanced up. A squat old woman was making her way slowly around the edge of the pond. She wore a ragged robe, a wide-brimmed straw hat, and tall wooden sandals that sank into the grass as she minced along the bank. In one gnarled hand, she held a bamboo pole, resting on a shoulder. The other gripped a cluster of tiny fish dangling from a string. Her eyes glimmered yellow beneath the brim of her hat as she looked up at me. I smiled. "Good evening, Tanuki Baba," I greeted politely. "What are you doing out here?" The old woman snorted and raised the cluster of fish.
"Planting flowers, what does it look like?"
I frowned in confusion. "But those are fish. Why would you be planting flowers, Tanuki Baba? You don't eat them.
Exactly. Some of us actually have to work for our food, unlike some spoiled, naive half-foxes I won't name.
She eyed me from under her hat, raising a thin gray eyebrow.
But what are you doing out so late, cub? Those humans of yours don't like it when you wander off.
She chuckled, showing a flash of yellow teeth.
Is Denga-san on the warpath? Did you turn the cat into a tea kettle again?
No, not in a long time. It scratches me when I try to put a leaf on its head, but...
I shivered, clutching at my arms. The sun-warmed rock suddenly felt cold.
Denga-san was angry, I told her. More than I've ever seen before. He said I was more yokai than human, and that Master Isao should put a binding on me. What if Master Isao listens to him? What if he really does seal off my magic?
I faltered, feeling my stomach twist at the thought of losing my power.
I can't imagine having no magic. It would be worse than cutting off my fingers or plucking out my eyes. If that happens, what will I do?
Tanuki Baba snorted.
Come, she said, gesturing down the trail with the end of her bamboo rod. I'll make you some tea.
I hopped down and followed the hunched form away from the pond onto the narrow, winding path through the bamboo forest. Her pole bobbed as she walked, and the tip of a bushy brown tail peeked from beneath the hem of her robe. I pretended not to notice, just as I knew she pretended not to see my ears and tail. It was an unspoken rule among yokai. One did not call attention to their yokai-ness if one did not want to be haunted, harassed, or cursed with extremely bad luck. Not that I was afraid Tanuki Baba would do so. To me, she had always been a grandmotherly old yokai, and the stories of the tricks she used to play on humans when she was a young tanuki were always entertaining, if sometimes scary. We emerged from the bamboo into a deeper, darker part of the forest. Here, ancient trees grew close together, intertwining branches nearly shutting out the sun. Thin streams of light cut weakly through the leaves, dappling the forest floor, and the air had a still, almost reverent feel. Curious Kodama, the tree spirits of the forest, peered at us from behind leaves or followed us down the trail, their ethereal green bodies no larger than my finger. Tanuki Baba led me along a familiar babbling brook, over a tiny arched bridge that was being eaten by toadstools and fungi, and toward a wooden hut that had been completely swallowed by moss. Long, long ago, she'd said, it had belonged to a yamabushi, a wandering priest who sought harmony and balance within nature, who could see and communicate directly with the kami. But that mortal had moved on or died, and the hut was now hers. Part of the thatched roof had fallen in, and trees and brush surrounded it. If you didn't know there was a dwelling there, you might miss it in the vegetation. The interior, as always, was a mess, with junk piled in every corner and along every wall. Sit, Tanuki Baba gruffed, gesturing to a low wooden table in the center of the floor, the only clear space in the room. I'll make us some tea, assuming I can find the pot, that is.
There were two or three teapots resting in different places throughout the clutter. I didn't say anything because my suggestions were always met with refusal. That teapot was cracked or dirty or had a family of birds living in it. No, the right teapot was here, somewhere, and only she could find it. I knelt at the wooden table until Tanuki Baba finally stumbled upon what she was looking for, an ancient and dinged iron pot, and yanked it out of the pile.
Empty, she sighed, peering in the top. That's good, I suppose. No mice this time. Means I have to fill it up, though. I'll be right back, she told me, waddling out again. Don't touch anything.
I waited patiently, rolling little flames of kitsunebi across the table surface, while Tanuki Baba filled the teapot, set it on the brazier, and lit the coals at the bottom. She then bustled about the room, taking things from the clutter along the walls and muttering to herself. Finally, she returned to the table with the teapot, two chipped cups and a tray bearing the fish she had caught, still raw and unscaled, laid out in a row. "Ah," she sighed, settling onto the threadbare pillow opposite me. After several moments of shifting around and making herself comfortable, she took off her hat and tossed it in a corner, where it blended into the clutter. Politely, I dropped my gaze, careful not to glance at the round, furry ears that poked up from the top of her gray head.
"Go on and pour the tea, cub,"
Tanuki Baba ordered, waving a hand at the pot and cups.
"At least make yourself useful."
I carefully poured a thin green liquid into the two cups, then offered one to her. She took it with a crooked smile and set it down before her.
"You don't mind if I switch forms while we eat, do you?"
she asked, eyeing the tray of fish in the center of the table.
"This body is more useful for tea making, but I'd rather be comfortable in my own house."
I shook my head. "Not at all, Tanuki Baba. Please do." She snorted, raised her head, and shook herself. Dust flew everywhere, rising from her body like a cloud, swirling into the room. I sneezed, turning away from the explosion, and when I glanced back, a furry brown creature with a dark mask and a bushy tail sat where the old woman had been. I set a teacup in front of her, and she picked it up with two dark brown paws before raising it to her narrow muzzle.
"Ah, much better."
She put the cup down with a clink and snatched a fish from the tray, tossing the whole thing into her jaws before crunching down with sharp yellow teeth.
"Now," she continued as I sipped my tea. It was far more bitter than I liked, but it wasn't polite to say so. "Tell me then, cub, what kind of trouble have you gotten into with those humans of yours?"
Briefly, I told her about my trick with the candles this evening and how it had infuriated the monks, particularly Denga-san. When I got to the part about Denga wanting Master Isao to seal away my magic, Tanuki Baba gave a violent snort and nearly knocked over her teacup.
"Ridiculous!" she growled, taking the last fish and biting into it with a snapping of delicate bones. "Binding a yokai's magic, ha! It is blasphemous to even suggest such a thing. I wouldn't put up with that sort of nonsense."
"What should I do, Tanuki Baba?"
"Well, I know what I would do in that situation,"
Tanuki Baba said, an evil look crossing her masked face.
"But you're probably too young for such chaos, and the solution is obvious, is it not? You need to leave."
"The monks don't like that," I said. "They're always very cross when I run off like this. I'll probably get a scolding when I return tonight."
"No," Tanuki Baba growled. "You need to leave and not go back."
"You mean leave the temple permanently?"
"Of course."
The old yokai gestured to the door of her hut.
"Do you think the temple is the only place you can live, and that the monk's way of life is the only one?"
Her muzzle wrinkled.
"There's a whole huge world out there, cub, full of wonder, riches, chaos, and things you can't even imagine. You're wasting both your life and your talents, staying behind those temple walls, listening to humans drone on about morality. A kitsune is not meant to be caged. Don't you want to get out there and see what you're missing?"
Something inside me stirred. The yearning, intrigue, and curiosity for the world beyond the walls rising to the surface again. I did want to know what was out there. I wanted to see the places Master Isao spoke of, the sprawling cities and tangled wilderness not meant for human feet. I ached to visit Kinhaigen Toshi, the great golden capital, and travel to the top of Finger of God Mountain, the highest peak in Iwagoto, which was said to touch the sky. I wanted to see samurai and merchants, nobles and peasants, geisha and bandits, and farmers and fishermen. I wanted to see it all. And in a tiny thought that I barely admitted even to myself, I was tired of always having my magic restricted. To practice fox magic only under supervision, or to be punished whenever I used it for pranks, jokes, or to get out of work. If I was truly free, there would be no limitations. I could use my kitsune powers however I wanted. But to do that, I would have to leave behind the monks, the temple, and the only life I'd ever known. And while the Order of the Silent Winds temple was small, confining, and rigid, it was also safe. I was just one kitsune, not even a full-blooded yokai. I wasn't quite ready to be that brave. "I can't leave Tanuki Baba," I told the hunched figure across the table. "Where would I go? How would I live?" Tanuki Baba blinked.
"What do you mean, how would you live?" she snapped. "You're kitsune girl. You'd go where you want. You live however you like."
"I'm only half kitsune," I pointed out, "and I've been with the monks my whole life. I don't know how to be a fox."
"Don't know how to be a fox?"
Tanuki Baba threw back her head and cackled. Flecks of spittle flew from her narrow jaws as she laughed, shaking her head.
"Poor little kitsune," she mocked. "You've lived with these humans for too long, letting their mortality infect you."
She chuckled, giving me a look of exasperation.
"You are a fox. You don't have to learn how to be kitsune. You just are."
"But..."
"And don't give me any excuses about your human side."
Tanuki Baba curled a lip, showing sharp yellow teeth.
"Even a drop of yokai blood is enough to suppress any hints of humanity if you wanted to. You just have to choose to be more kitsune than mortal."
Choose to be more kitsune? How did I do that? Was there a ritual for it? I thought back to what Denga-san had said this evening about my yokai nature overshadowing my humanity. Was that what the monks were afraid of? Did they fear I would turn into a nogitsune, an evil wild fox that delighted in fear and chaos and preyed on humans whenever it could? I swallowed hard. "But what if I don't want to be more kitsune?" I asked, making Tanuki Baba frown. "What if I'm happy as a human and a fox?" She sniffed.
"Then you are a fool," she stated bluntly, "and you are fighting a losing battle. It is very hard to be human, little fox. Even the humans themselves don't do a great job of it. The mortal world is full of hatred, betrayal, sadness, and death. Most yokai and kami alike find that it is too much for them. Everything the humans think they value, love, honor, empathy, compassion, we yokai need nothing of those, especially when they so often lead to suffering and despair. It is far easier to abandon everything that is human and just be kitsune. The world of spirits and yokai is far less complicated than the world of men."
"I don't understand, Tanuki Baba."
"Of course not."
Tanuki Baba shook her shaggy head, but did not elaborate.
"You are a cub with no sense of the world. But you will learn. If you continue to try to balance your two natures, you will. And in time, when you finally experience what the human world is truly like, you will decide that being a fox is much less difficult than being human."
She glanced down at the table, nostrils twitching.
"But now, our teacups are empty and the fish is gone. That means it is time for bed."
I rose and bowed to the ancient Tanuki. One did not question the habits or behaviors of yokai as old as she. I should go home, I said, taking a step back. The monks will probably be waiting with a lecture. Thank you for the tea and the conversation, Tanuki Baba.
Box cub,
the old yokai called as I reached the door. I glanced back to see the squat, furry creature sitting in the squalor of her house, watching me with eyes that glowed yellow in the shadows.
You walk a thin line, little kitsune, she said, and her voice was a warning, though I didn't know from what. The place between the spirit realm and the mortal realm is a difficult one indeed. Remember, you can always give up your humanity if things become too hard. It is far easier for a kitsune, even a half-kitsune, to abandon it than one who is fully mortal.
I still didn't know what she meant by that, so I simply nodded and left, slipping into the dim quiet of the woods. Immediately, I knew something was wrong. In the time I had spent in Tanuki Baba's home, night had fallen, and the forest had gone deathly still. Instead of birdsong or the rustle of small creatures scampering through the undergrowth, an ominous silence hung in the air. The forest kami had vanished like they'd never been, leaving an empty, lifeless woods behind. And a new scent was creeping through the trees, raising the hairs on the back of my neck. The sharp, acrid scent of smoke. I sprinted through the forest, retracing my steps past the hollow, the stream, and the bamboo grove until I reached the pond. The green and silver wall opened up, showing the night sky with a faded crescent moon overhead and a smear of crimson sinking into the west. My heart twisted. A dark smudge was rising over the tree line, coiling and ominous, like a terrible black dragon. It snaked into the air, blotting out the stars, coming from the direction of home.
5. Demons in the bamboo. I was close. Even on horseback, it had taken me several days to reach EarthClan territory and the Niwaki Mountains, where the Silent Winds Temple was said to be located. The tiny farming community in the valley below the forested peaks stared at me, wide-eyed, as I rode past terraced fields and thatched huts, following the path that snaked toward the mountains. A pair of small children trailed behind my horse, palpably curious and getting steadily closer until they were snatched away by worried-looking adults. Traveling samurai were likely rare to this part of the valley, members of the Shadow Clan even more so, and farmers naturally gave the warrior class a wide berth. For this mission, I was dressed in the part of a kage samurai, in hakama trousers and a black haori jacket, the crest of the Shadow Clan on my back. My shinobi gear was tucked into the saddlebags of my horse in case I needed it, though a shadow warrior never revealed himself to outsiders. If I was denied entry at the gates, I would slip over the walls and infiltrate the temple as silently as a yurei ghost. But for now, I was a samurai on a warrior's pilgrimage, seeking wisdom at the shrines across Iwagoto. A thin farmer, wearing a ragged tunic and a cloth tied around his forehead, bowed low as I passed, dropping his gaze to the dirt. I pulled the horse to a stop and glanced down at him, or rather, at the top of his bald head. "Is the Silent Winds Temple nearby?" I asked softly. The man didn't look up, only bobbed once at the waist, his eyes on his sandaled feet as he replied,
"Hi, my lord. The temple is right up this path, at the top of the mountain."
"Thank you." I gave the horse a nudge and continued on, leaving the farmers and the village behind. The path became a narrow, twisting trail that grew more treacherous the farther it wound through the forest. I surmised that the monks of this temple rarely received or encouraged visitors. Perhaps they simply wish to meditate and study in peace, far removed from the chaos of the world. Or perhaps they were hiding, protecting something. As night fell and the shadows grew long, the trail nearly vanished, melting into the brush and thick undergrowth, as if the forest itself took offense to intruders. But I had been trained to spot the hidden and the invisible, and darkness was no hindrance for me. I continued, passing bamboo groves and huge trees strung with sacred rope, signifying they were home to the kami. In my head, Hakaemono stirred. I pulled the horse to a stop and sat, motionless, trying to hear past the labored breaths of the animal beneath me. Around us, the woods were silent and still, evening shadows cloaking all but a few spots of mottled red sunlight. Very slightly, I opened myself up to the sword and felt the terror in the woods around me, the rapid heartbeats of many living things. Coming toward us? There was a rustle in the bushes ahead, and my horse froze, every muscle taut. With an eruption of leaves and vegetation, a herd of spotted deer leaped out of the trees and bounded toward me, causing my pulse to spike and my horse to rear up with a squeal. I kept my seat as the animal tried to bolt, squeezing my knees and pulling back the reins, managing to bring it under control. It snorted and trembled, ears pinned to its skull, as the deer sprang past us and continued into the forest. Hakaemono flared, and I shoved the demon's presence down as well. As the horse calmed, I breathed cautiously and caught the hint of smoke on the wind. I gazed through the canopy overhead, saw a curl of blackness rising over the treetops, and kicked the horse into motion. We sped down the trail, Hakaemono pulsing eagerly in my mind, knowing violence was not far away, and death would soon follow. The air grew hazy and sharp, smelling of burning timber, and my stomach clenched. Looking up, I saw a faint crimson glow against the sky. Small forest creatures, rabbits, squirrels, and others, fled through the undergrowth, going in the opposite direction, and my horse began to balk, fighting my orders to continue. Grimly, I set my heels to its ribs and continued, knowing it wasn't the fire that was spooking it. Something was here in the forest. And whatever it was, I couldn't allow it to hinder my mission. I had to get to the scroll. As we reached the narrow, half-eroded flight of steps through a bamboo forest, a kama sickle flew from the bushes, spinning end over end, and struck my mount in the neck. As the horse screamed and fell, crashing to the steps, I sprang from the saddle and rolled, feeling the jarring impact through my shoulder, then came to my feet several yards away. A flood of small, grotesque creatures spilled from the bamboo forest, cackling and waving spears and crude blades. They swarmed the horse, leaping atop its back, shrieking and poking as it struggled to its feet. Panicked, the mortally wounded horse fled, bucking wildly down the path with its demonic passengers clinging to the saddle, while the rest of the horde spun on me. A manjaku? I felt a ripple of both shock and unease, even as Hakaemono flared excitedly at so many things to kill. I had dealt with them in the past, but never in these numbers. How were there so many? I drew kamigoroshi as the demons shrieked, baring their fangs and attacked. One sweep split the first wave in half, severing heads and torsos, and the amanjaku howled as they were sent back to jigoku. Leaping forward, I dodged a spear thrust at me, stabbed a demon in the eye, and beheaded another as I yanked the blade out. Then I was in their midst, and it was nothing but teeth and claws and flashing blades. I gave myself over to the dance of death, Hakaemono's unrestrained glee surging through my veins. With alarmed shrieks and howls, the remaining amanjaku scattered into the bamboo forest, their small forms fading quickly from view. Panting, I lowered kamigoroshi and looked around, wondering where they'd come from, who had brought them here. Amanjaku were minor demons of Jigoku. They couldn't appear out of nowhere, but the blood magic needed to summon them was a dangerous power that was strictly forbidden throughout the empire. The key component to working the magic of Jigoku was, of course, blood. Sometimes it required other things, souls, organs, body parts, but mostly it called for the life force that ran through all mortal veins. The larger, more powerful the spell, the more blood was required to successfully cast it. But the dangerous catch was, it didn't have to come from the practitioner. Jigoku didn't care whose blood was spilled, be it man, woman, or child, as long as it was human, and as long as the price was paid. Although, as befitting the realm of evil and corruption, the more you cared for the person whose blood was being spilled, the more powerful the magic that came of it. A lover, brother, or child whom you betrayed would bestow far more power than a nameless stranger. This was the reason the Empire forbade blood magic, why practicing the dark arts was an immediate death sentence. Even a single Amanjaku required a blood sacrifice to draw it into the mortal realm. I couldn't imagine the amount an entire horde would call for. I didn't know who had summoned the demons, but I could certainly guess why. After sheathing Kamigoroshi, I sprinted up the trail, heading for the temple and hoping I wasn't too late.
6. The Flames of Despair. The temple was on fire. I burst out of the forest, panting, staring in horror at the bright orange flames snapping against the night sky. The elegant, four-tiered pagoda roofs were ablaze, a roaring, savage inferno, the stench of smoke, ash, and charred timbers scorching the air. Ripples of heat seared my skin as I approached the back wall, scrambled gracelessly to the top, and dropped with a thump into the gardens. What did this? Who would dare? I'd heard tales of the world beyond the temple walls, stories of warring clans and fierce, proud samurai, tales of rival daimyo lords and their endless bickering, how they would declare war and hurl entire armies at each other over some imagined slight to their honor. But according to Master Isao, even the most savage, warmongering daimyo respected the monks, or at least would not risk the kami's wrath by attacking a peaceful temple. Unless they knew about the scroll. A shriek turned my blood to ice, and I ducked behind a juniper tree. Peering around the trunk, trying not to inhale smoke and ash, I dug my nails into the bark to keep myself from gasping in terror. A crowd of small, grotesque things were gibbering and dancing around the pond, silhouetted in the hellish light of the fires. At first, I thought they were misshapen children. They wore ratty tunics, had large, bulbous heads, and stood barely past my knees. But then I saw the horns, the mouths full of pointed teeth, the tattered ears and jutting fangs. Their skin was either a mottled blue or red, and they carried crude weapons in their claws, kama sickles, spears, and short knives. My blood chilled. Demons? Jinkei's mercy, why are demons here? I had seen pictures of demons in the temple library, terrible red or blue-skinned oni with horns, fangs, and enormous clubs who tormented the wicked souls sent to Jigoku. These creatures, stabbing the poor trapped carp swirling frantically around the pond, weren't as big as the monsters in the books, but I could tell they were demons nonetheless. I clenched my fist against the trunk, feeling the bark dig into my knuckles. Why were demons here? Why were they attacking the temple? For the scroll? But I thought the creatures of Jigoku lived only for bloodshed and chaos. The scroll would mean nothing to demons, unless something else, or someone else, was commanding them. This makes no sense. I have to find Master Isao. But first, I have to get past those demons. After plucking a leaf from the juniper tree, I slipped around the trunk and placed the leaf on my head, drawing on my fox magic. For a moment, I found it horribly ironic that just this afternoon, I'd been wishing to use my magic more often. My heart pounded, but I held the image of what I wanted in my mind, then released the magic over my body. There was a soundless explosion of smoke, and when I opened my eyes, my skin was a mottled red, and my feet had hooked yellow claws on the ends of their toes. With a deep breath, I stepped away from the tree, just as one of the demons at the pond looked up and spotted me. It blinked for a moment, frowning, and I held my breath, hoping he saw what I wanted him to see, a fellow demon, red-skinned and hideous. I chanced a grin, bearing crooked fangs, and the demon snorted, returning to its game of stabbing the carp. The once crystal-clear water of the pond was now red with blood. Leaving the doomed fish to their fate, I hurried on. The roar of the fire greeted me as I left the gardens, and clouds of swirling embers stung my skin as I passed the engulfed pagoda and ran toward the main hall, keeping to the bushes and shadows. An even bigger crowd of demons swarmed the building, waving torches and cavorting around the steps that led to the entrance. When I peeked through the leaves, my stomach gave a painful twist. A few yards away, a body lay sprawled on the stones of the courtyard, a pair of spears jutting from its chest, vacant eyes staring into nothing. Jin! I clapped both hands over my mouth to keep the cry from escaping, feeling my eyes start to burn. Jin had always been kind to me, always patient and understanding, never growing irritated or raising his voice. And now he was gone. Behind the monk, I could see another pair of bodies lying in pools of blood, their faces turned away so I didn't recognize them in the shadows. But I would. As soon as I saw them clearly, I would know them. Shaking, I lowered my arms and wrenched my gaze from the bodies. "I can't mourn them now," I told myself, forcing back the blurriness in my eyes. "I have to keep going." I wondered why none of the demons had gone into the building. The main entrance lay open and unguarded, since the hall had no doors to speak of. As I watched, a larger blue demon gave a raspy cry, lifted a wooden mallet above its head, and rushed the door, scuttling toward the stairs. But as it reached the bottom step, there was a flash like a burst of lightning, and the demon bounced off like it had hit a stone wall, to the cackles and high-pitched laughter of the rest. My eyes widened. A key barrier? I had seen such a thing before. Master Isao had sometimes demonstrated the power of ki for the other monks, creating walls of force that could not be breached, or surrounding an object with an invisible barrier that made it impossible to touch the thing inside. But a whole building? The amount of concentration that must require was unfathomable. Also, how am I supposed to get through? The barrier covers the whole building, unless... My heart beat faster. Very powerful key masters had such control over their key that they could choose who could pass through the barrier and who could not. If Master Isao heard the demons coming and realized I wasn't at the temple, surely he would make it so I could pass through the barrier, right? Setting my jaw, I took a step away from the bushes when a tremor went through the ground under my feet. Gazing back at the hall, I saw a massive horned shadow appear. My heart nearly stopped. Silhouetted against the flames, the beast walked slowly around the corner of the building, resolving itself into something huge and terrible. Oh, Oni? I stumbled backward in terror, watching as the enormous red creature lumbered toward the entrance, scattering smaller demons before it. Cold sweat trickled down my back as it came into view, fangs, horns and huge spiked club shining in the torchlight. This was the monster from the storybooks. Jigoku's most infamous denizens with the nightmares of legend, terrifying and near unstoppable. Why? Why is there an Oni here? Why? But that was a stupid question. I already knew the answer. It was here for the scroll. Oh, why didn't I listen to Master Isao when he told me about the scroll and why it was so important? Why didn't I listen? At the top of the steps, the Oni paused, gazing toward the entrance of the hall, the heavy spiked tetsubo resting over one shoulder. Swinging the club in one hand, it prodded the barrier with the end of the weapon and watched the wall flicker and pulse with every poke. The smaller demons clustered around the Oni's legs, waiting eagerly, their eyes glowing as red as the firelight. The Oni snorted, rolled its massive shoulders, and hefted its club in both hands. It brought the tetsubo smashing down on the key barrier, and the shockwave that pulsed out tossed the branches of the surrounding trees and sent the demon horde stumbling back. For a moment, the invisible dome shivered into view, rippling like a mirage before fading from sight again. I winced, wondering if the barrier would shatter, knowing that each blow was also an assault on the monk's concentration as they struggled to maintain their focus. The barrier held, but the Oni raised the club to hit it again, and the horde cackled as they waited for it to fall. I had to get inside now. Kami, protect me. With a deep breath, I stepped from the bushes and walked as calmly as I could across the yard, praying my disguise would hold. Several demons glanced up, frowning, but most of their attention was diverted to the huge Oni, who smashed its club into the barrier again. In the hellish light, the dome rippled, and I could see silver cracks creeping up the surface, making my blood run cold. It wouldn't hold much longer. Wanting to avoid the massive Oni, I slipped around the side of the building, breathing a sigh of relief as I ducked around the corner, and immediately collided with a demon sprinting around the wall. Its blue bulbous head smacked into my stomach, driving the air from my lungs with the force of a key punch. I reeled back and fell, gasping, and felt my hold on the illusion shatter in a puff of white smoke. The demon, who had also been knocked back, rubbed its forehead with a claw, wincing, then glared at me. Its red eyes widened in shock as it saw not a fellow demon, but a girl with furry ears and a tail, sitting there in the dirt. It leaped up with a howl and lunged, and I scrambled back, just managing to dodge the sword as it thunked into the spot I had been. Two more demons appeared from the shadows, one holding a spear, the other brandishing a pair of kama sickles. They cackled as they spotted me and charged, while the blue demon continued to swipe at me with his blade. As the others closed in, I gave a snarl of frustration and hurled a ball of kitsunebi into the blue demon's face. It flinched back with a hiss, claws going to its eyes, as if expecting to be burned. The blue-white flames flared bright for a moment, then faded harmlessly into nothing. But it gave me enough time to lunge past the demon, changing into a fox as I did, and dart beneath the veranda. There was a sharp tingle as I passed through the key barrier, like a static shock along your whole body, and then the comforting darkness of the space beneath the hall closed around me. Safe. My legs shook as I crawled beneath the floorboards, sliding over cold earth and pushing through the webs, looking for the loose board that would lead behind the statue of the prophet. Overhead, the booms of the Oni's club shook the building, showering me with dust and causing spiders to flee in terror. A sliver of orange light glimmered in the darkness ahead, illuminating a thin rectangle of dirt, and I hurried toward it. Squeezing between the planks, I clawed myself onto the floor of the great hall, the statue of the Jade Prophet looming overhead. I staggered away from the statue and looked around for Master Isao. My stomach twisted. He sat before the statue of the prophet, hands cupped in his lap, eyes closed and face serene. The rest of the monks sat around him, also in meditation, though I could see sweat pouring from their faces, their brows furrowed in concentration.